friends. This incident really and truly happened yesterday. I was coming down the elevator of a hotel. And alongside of me in the elevator was a big fat man. He said, "Father, it's cool tonight." I said, "Yes." It's the reason I wore my top coat. I said, "You don't have any on, do you?" "No," he said. I said, "You don't need one." And then, touching his big fat body, I said, "You're well insulated." He says, "Father, I don't drink." I was once giving a telecast, and this will introduce this subject. And I was writing on the blackboard at the time, and in a certain home, a mother said to her little child, "You go into the front room and listen to Bishop Sheen. He's on television. He's smart. You'll learn something." Well, when he came in, I was just writing the word sex on the blackboard. He came out and said to his mother, "He's not so smart. He doesn't know how to spell six." So this is the six revolution. Well, that's what's being said, that we're living in a day of the sex revolution. I wonder if everybody went through a red light in traffic, if we wouldn't say we had a traffic revolution. And with all the dishonesty that's going on in business and politics, one wonders if we do not have an honesty or dishonesty revolution. And with the muggings, an increase of murders, do we not have a murder revolution? In other words, we seem to say there's a sex revolution simply because, well, everybody's doing it. And since we are practicing certain things that are wrong, we've been inclined to label it sex revolution. Is it really that at all? I doubt it very much. There have always been revolutions of this kind in history. But I think instead of it being a sex revolution, it's a culture revolution that we have. Sex is merely the manifestation of a crisis that we have in our culture. Our times are those in which people are full of frustration, anxiety, fear, and dread. They're lonely. They've broken off all bonds with the eternal. And they find that this is one of the outlets. It gives them just a temporary release. Yes, there's been this kind of immorality in the past. But this difference between the past and the present. In the 14th, 15th century, there was a breakdown of morals. So much so that it brought on the religious revolution. So there's a breakdown of morals today. But in those days, people knew they did wrong. They didn't call the wrong right. Today, when there's a cancer, we call it health. Men stole in those days. And some of them were just as rotten as they are today. But they always believed in a moral order. And that's the reason when individuals fell, civilization did not. Now let me give you some suggestions to prove that this is really a cultural revolution rather than a sex revolution. First of all, it's a kind of a cultural revolution because this immorality among the young is almost a question of status. Status. Girls in colleges, in high schools, for example, will boast among other girls of their immorality, look down upon others who have not been immoral, because they seem to put themselves in a superior position. Boys, in like manner, will boast of how many girls they have ruined. You see, the primary interest, really, does not seem to be in sex. If it were, they wouldn't take this attitude of seeking to achieve status. Oh, they're different. They're bigger. And they feel so uncomfortable, they show a disdain for anyone else. And then, too, from another point of view, sex has become very, very intellectual. It's talked about, it's written about, it's advertised as the subject of every film, book, and so forth. In other words, it has gone out of the area of the body and has got up into the brain. So that it has become an obsession. Now, sex of and by itself does not take that particular outlet. It's culture that takes that outlook. And tries to intellectualize it. Just suppose there was a television show with this plot. Advertised as striptease. And everyone is invited to this particular production. The lights flicker. Grow dim. And is wheeled out on the stage by six or seven men. A great and tremendous platter with a cover on it. Then blasts of horns. And then the cover is dramatically lifted off. And you see a piece of raw hamburger. Now suppose some people from India that are starving, some people from the slums of Latin America came to see this show. And they said, this is an American production. They would say, what are you Americans thinking about? Haven't you gone wrong about your concept of food? Is that all that you think about? When you have to make food the object of teasing? It's exactly what they would say. They'd say the same thing, too, about sex. So I say it's a cultural problem. And juvenile delinquency and other manifestations of crime that we have, the love of dope, this is just another phase of our cultural revolution in which our lonely, empty souls are trying to fill up the nakedness. And the final suggestion that it is cultural is the fact that there's so much perversity attached to this so-called sex revolution. The glorification of homosexuality, perverseness, murder is associated, unnatural crimes. Sex doesn't decorate itself with those things, but a bad culture does. Men were really going back to the primitive, to the natural, to the primeval. They wouldn't so much surround it with these cultural appurtenances. Now, this is a subject that's very difficult to talk about. Why is it difficult? Why, for example, do parents find it almost impossible to talk about it to their children? We say that, oh yes, we've got to have an education of sex. Yes? The argument that they use is, well, if you knew, for example, there was typhoid fever in a house, would you break into that house? So if we point out the dangers associated with sex, then the young people will not go in. Nonsense! There isn't a boy or girl in the world who's got an urge to break down a front door where there's a typhoid patient and break in. He has a drive, he has an urge. That must be understood in a different way. We said some years ago, oh, there's too much prudery. Let's bring it out into the open. We'll have no more trouble. Well, we brought it out in the open. Now we have a lot of trouble. Why is it so difficult? Well, what is the nature of sex? Sex has a double element. Sex is a mystery. What is the known thing about sex? Well, the known thing is that everybody's male or female. So there is something that is physical about it. And there's also something that is non-physical, and we're going to call it spiritual. You can use another word if there's a prejudice against the word spiritual. And the spiritual is that sex is hidden in some way in a deep personal love. It is related to one person. It is an almost incommunicable moment. That peculiar experience where something that lies too deep for words is given in a wordless way. Now, this physical element you can talk about. Because it's known, it's there. Now we answer our question, why is it so difficult for parents to talk to children about it? It's difficult because the children can understand, be told, physiological process just as they can be told about digestion. But there's something that the children cannot understand and the parents find it impossible to communicate to them, and that is that how this thing is related to a profound, abiding love. Until they get into that lawful union with all of its ineffable moments, they cannot understand it. That's why it's hard. And to reduce this, the physical side of it, to something just like eating is nonsense. Why is it, for example, people do not mind eating in public? Because it's not personal. It hasn't that invisible spiritual element that love has. And that's the reason we're disgusted at seeing lovemaking in public. Because it takes that which is personal and makes it common, subjects it to what the Latins call the vulgus, the crowd. Something remotely like it comes, there comes a moment in the life of every boy, when he just gets tired of his mother putting a handkerchief up to his nose and say, blow hard. That day, the boy's a man. There are certain things every man must do for himself. Blow his own nose, make his own love. And so he wants to take it out of this common aspect that involves anybody that comes up with a handkerchief and says, blow hard. Now, when we just communicate this, the physical, and we leave out the spiritual and the atmosphere of love, well, when we do that, then we have children saying, well, there's no difference between a boy and a girl. And between animals. After all, do not they have identically the same physiological processes? And since we're just animals, and who doesn't get that impression simply by treating the physical, since we're just animals, why not act like an animal? If we came from the beast, well, let's act like beasts. And that justification is what you generally hear because it has been isolated from the mysterious side. Now, even is that true, that it is just physical and we just do what comes naturally? Now, really, is that true? Animals mate only in season. Man doesn't. That's the first difference. Therefore, this mating process has been taken out of the realm of the automatic and the physiological. And it's brought into the area of freedom. It involves the intellect, understanding, choice, all those things which are so characteristic of man. That is one of the reasons why rape is so evil. It deprives the other person of freedom. They're not animals. and why a girl on the street would object to any man coming up and throwing her arms around her. Why? Because she's a free being. She's not a cow. She's captain and master of her own fate and destiny. She has a soul. She's got freedom, and she's going to use it a little bit differently than the beast of the field. You know, as I look ahead in my mind as to what I had to treat in this telecast really should last about an hour. I've only got to 2 or 3 minutes yet, 2.5 minutes. So I will have to pull it in and not be able to finish it all, which will make you very curious because you will say, I wonder what he intended to say. That's the part you will enjoy more than anything else. And what I didn't say. Oh, I would have loved to have heard. That's the first reason why it's not purely animal. And then secondly, let me say to you boys, you young men, say just animal, that's all, purely biological, physiological. If that's so, why do you get mad at another boy who does the same thing to your sister? Why do you say, she's my sister? If she's an animal, does that make any difference? Someone on the street rapes your mother. What difference if she's an animal? Do I have a minute or a minute and 30 seconds? Minute and a half, thank you. And so the boy instinctively knows very well that there's a difference, that they're not beasts. And so I say in conclusion to you young men and women, do not be taking a torch and throwing it into a city and burning it and destroying it simply because you like to see ashes and debris and filth. What kind of human beings are we? If that's the way we spend our life, destroying cities and disrespecting the art, the culture, the buildings, the science, and all the beautiful things that are in this city. And every other person is a city, and that city is made to the image and likeness of God.
Bishop Sheen will...
I didn't have time to develop everything I intended to in that telecast, but now I do have time to say, bye now, and God love you.